Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Maple. It's 10:09. This is John Williams. Mark Carmen's in for Joe Brand. Nice to see Carm. Griffin Philippich is our producer today. I'm John. You hear me weekdays from 1 to 3. I guess I am a curmudgeon, and I didn't know that. But last night, I thought, Brendan and I didn't have a lot going on. We'll just hang out. I was going to watch some TV. The Bears game was boring, and the Cubs game, you saw that disaster coming. You just had the feeling they were going to implode, and they did not disappoint. Chicago Tribune this morning has an article, 10 worst moments of the season so far. Where do the last two games rank? I got to think up pretty high. So then I thought, well, at least the White Sox are on the West Coast. That'll be fun. And the White Sox didn't play last night. Bill Walton did. There was no broadcast of the baseball game last evening. Now, some of you love that. USA Today says it was terrific. CBS said it was entertaining. But you know what? They're not White Sox fans. I wanted to watch a White Sox game. Mark Carmen, go.
John, I love you. You know this. And I have my own level of curmudgeonness, too. However, it does not apply to this particular situation. There is 162 baseball games. The White Sox are not in a pennant race. Jason Benetti and Bill Walton wearing tie-dyes and talking about hitting the ball to Pluto. I'm good with that on a West Coast game once a year. I mean, I'll sign up for that every single year. And the game's right there. You know baseball, John.
I turned the volume down. I actually turned
well,
the volume
down.
That's
fine. You can do that. That's your option.
Once again, I'm quoting from CBS.com. Walton showed once again he might be more of a basketball guy when he asked, who holds the record for most strikeouts in an inning? Think about that.
Yeah.
It's like a 4,000 way tie.
Yeah, I know.
Or it's I don't know.
Right. It's probably that. 4,000 guys have probably struck out the side.
Well, if I'd be the nerd sports guy right now, there are examples of people striking out
four, and that
list is shorter.
Fine. I'll bet that's what he was thinking of.
Yeah, you're right. He was not. I get it.
No, but look at the interesting conversation it sparked. You wouldn't have had that.
I would not have had this without that.
That's right.
But like him before last night, John? Bill Walton?
No. Well, I liked him as a player. I think he's one of those guys that everybody's he's heard too many people say he's funny. He's not funny. He thinks as long as he's talking, it's gold. It's not. You're annoying after a while.
Yeah, I don't think he's changing, though, right? That's his game.
All right. Griffin, speaking of good humor, let's play the humor music, please. Yesterday was National Joke Day. I don't know if you've been following that, but we asked our listeners to text in their favorite jokes. Proton says to an electron, why are you so negative? I have a lot of atomic jokes for some reason. John,
worth noting that you just came in really hot. You just came in really hot calling someone else unfunny.
Wait, you haven't heard them all yet.
All right, here we go.
Hey, one atom says to another, I think I lost an electron. The other one says, are you sure? Yes, says the first atom, I'm positive. Eh? Who's with me now? Okay, here's one. Tell me if this isn't funny. Sammy Snail was attacked by three turtles. The cop asked him for a description of his attackers, but he said it all happened so quickly I didn't get a good look at him. Right? A truck loaded with thesaurus is overturned on a country road. Police say witnesses were stunned, overwhelmed, astonished, dumbfounded, bewildered. Guy falls out of the sky, lands in some bushes. Lady comes up to him and says, hey, what happened? Guy says, I don't know, I just got here. Guy goes into a doctor's office, says, help me, doc, I'm shrinking. Doctor says, now, be a little patient. My wife caught me standing on the bathroom scale, sucking in my stomach. Hey, she said, that's not going to help. Sure it does, I said. It's the only way I can see the numbers. Okay, I'll give you one more. I applied for a job as an invisible man, but I really can't see myself doing that. So if you want to play along, are your mics working? Because I don't hear anything. It's weird. 312-981-7200 if you want to share a joke with us. I'll be happy to pass it along. 312-981-7200. Just text in a joke and I'll pass it along. That'll be a lot of fun. Aaron Waters show is this weekend, of course, and now the lakefront isn't as pretty as it has been the last couple of days when they've been practicing along Lake Michigan. Steve Dale was on our show yesterday, the pet expert. He's got the Pet Central radio show here Sunday mornings at 6:30. You will enjoy his expertise. Steve's really good at stuff. And so we were asking him, what do you do when there's loud noises like the 4th of July? And he had some interesting ideas, including when you leave the home, put on the radio or TV. And I said, do dogs really watch TV? Do they really listen to the radio? And he said, yes, they do. And then we said, text if your dog watches TV. John, my dog knows the commercials that have dogs in them and will come running when the music starts. He'll jump almost as high as the receiver. It's hilarious to watch. 262 said, my cat Skittles watches TV. His favorite is Cubs baseball pitching. 219 said, John, my dog not only watches TV, she controls the remote. 847, our cat likes Tom Skilling, especially his isobars, and looks behind the TV to see who's there. 815, John, my son's dog runs at the TV, barks, and runs in circles each time an animal comes on TV. John, our English Golden Retriever watches TV all the time. He tends to bark at horses and dogs that come on. He's pretty smart, though. He will start barking at the beginning of a commercial when he knows a dog comes on at the end of the commercial. I do not have these kinds of dogs. My dogs are not focused. My dogs do not know about television. 815, John, my dog really likes Vanna White. 708, Comcast has a dog channel for a few dollars a month. A couple of you also said that here's what will happen. If your dog sees a dog or a horse run across the TV screen, they will run to the side of the TV. And one of you told us that your dog will actually run outside. You have a little doggy door, and when the horse or dog runs to the, across the screen, they go outside to see if it's there. God bless your dogs. It's 10:15 on WGN. John Williams on a Saturday morning. We're going to continue to watch the weather for you. There's not a lot of rain in the forecast, so looks like the Aaron Waters show is going to happen as scheduled. It just would have been nice if it had been a little bit nicer, but maybe a little radio or TV. Steve also said maybe a closet, maybe some sort of create a little cave-like situation where your dog or cat can go hide in there. Maybe put something with your scent on it, an old T-shirt or something. That could be comforting to the pets, especially if you are away. This week, there was a very interesting controversy, and I'll just play a few highlights from it for you after a quick break. But it has to do with the Statue of Liberty and the poem that's affixed to the base of the Statue of Liberty, which is a lovely poem that you and I really don't know that well. And it doesn't take 40 seconds to read. I just want to tell you the story about that statue and that poem after this. So here's the deal. The administration wants to tighten immigration policy. We've all been following the debate. And at a press briefing this week, CNN's Jim Acosta, yes, Jim Acosta, asked presidential advisor Stephen Miller if the new policy ideas violate the spirit of the Statue of Liberty and the poem affixed to it.
The poem that you're referring to that was added later is not actually part of the original Statue of Liberty, but more fundamentally,
I'm saying the notion.
Their exchange went 6 minutes arguing about the Statue of Liberty and what it means to be America. So later, Ken Cuccinelli, who is the acting director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, defended a more narrow view of that famous poem whose title is The New Colossus.
Well, of course, that poem was referring back to people coming from Europe where they had class-based societies where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class.
So I thought, hokey smokes. Have we been hearing this wrong all along? Our national ethos isn't welcoming to the wretched and the poor, but as Cuccinelli said,
give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own 2 feet.
Ah, so that's what the poem is all about. It's not welcoming to everybody, but to those who can support themselves. The poem itself, it's a dozen lines. Have you read it? Have you heard it in its entirety? It's by Emma Lazarus, and it's called The New Colossus. And the poem goes like this. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me. You're tired. You're poor. Your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless. Tempest-tossed to me, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. So that's beautiful. I called Elizabeth Metzger Sampson, the executive director of the Chicago Poetry Center, to talk to us about it this week. It was actually on the stream at WGNradio.com. Even if the policy is more complicated over the last 30 years than you or I might think, I asked her, do we have the Statue of Liberty poem wrong?
I think that Miller and Cuccinelli are both quite a bit confused with this poem that, frankly, doesn't leave a lot open to interpretation. She's pretty straightforward and literal in her poem. So, first of all, to Miller, the poem was actually written before the statue was erected. It just wasn't put on it until after. And she wrote it specifically to fundraise money for the statue. She actually wasn't going to at first, and a fellow writer convinced her to by telling her that this would be of great import to immigrants coming into that harbor. So that gives us a little bit of a frame for Emma Lazarus's thinking at that point in time, that she really wrote this for immigrants to be this, you know, welcoming message as they came in. The poem makes that pretty clear straight through. You know, she starts by saying, not like the giant of Greek fame. So not like this conquering colossus from the past. But no. Here's this mighty woman who is welcoming you. Her name is the Mother of Exiles, and she's holding out her lamp. And she specifically says, it glows with worldwide welcome. So I'm not sure how you can get just Europe from that line. You know, whether we're speaking from a geographical perspective or a literature perspective, I'm not sure how you could get Europe only from this Mother of Exiles glows with worldwide welcome.
If that was the U.S. policy at the time, she's not writing about that either way.
Right. And she's specifically trying to urge forward the America that she hopes will be America's identity. And of course, her poem does very much become the identity marker, the meaning with the Statue of Liberty that it has maintained since 1903. So, you know, in writing this, she's specifically saying, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, those who are homeless, tempest-tossed. To me, that does not sound like she's saying someone who is currently standing on their own two feet.
I'm looking in here for even a hint of that. You know, there's not even the tiniest door for that framing of this poem, is there?
There really isn't, and her meaning is just so clear, from, you know, her beacon glows with worldwide welcome to send me the homeless and the tempest-tossed. All the way through, her meaning is quite clear that she wants America to be seen in opposition to the current closed borders of Europe. At the time she was writing the poem, she was very worried about what was happening in Europe, and she wanted America to stand up as this new and beautiful beacon of welcoming citizens from across the world.
Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with the torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. I just love that imagery. You can imagine an immigrant coming across, having survived an Atlantic crossing, and then sort of seeing the Statue of Liberty and literally believing that when the doors open, there's going to be a light and they have a chance.
That's right. And it's also useful to look at it with the two lines before it, not like the brazen giant of Greek fame with conquering limbs astride from land to land. So she's saying, here's this woman who is welcoming you as opposed to this sort of conqueror aspect. A lot of the poem is set up in opposition to Europe, saying, no, here there will be this feminine, welcoming, mighty figure. And of course, that's repeated at the end when this Mother of Exiles lifts her lamp beside the golden door, right? So the golden door, she's welcoming them into America.
The whole idea feels so comforting here. Her mild eyes command the harbor that the Twin Cities frame. And then she says, keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp. Give me, you're tired, as though that would be preferable. You want to cry at the compassion that this statue is supposedly showing. I don't want the pomp. I want the tired, the poor, the huddled, those that are just yearning to breathe free. I don't know what to make of the phrase wretched refuse. There is some writing today about that. What do you make of those two words?
It's probably not language that that very same poet, I would imagine, would use today to speak in the same way. But I believe what she's saying is essentially those that are cast off by a society. So, you know, those that are in the margins, those that are unwelcome, those that are unsupported, which would be, of course, why they are fleeing and why they need a new home that her mother of exiles is going to welcome.
Right, but if we were sympathetic today, we're so sensitive to other peoples and cultures, we probably would not describe the cast-offs as wretched refuse.
Absolutely not.
Well, hopefully we get through all of this and still think of, or the world will still think of, the gates to America as a golden door. I don't know how we all feel about that now, but at least that's what Emma Lazarus was asking us to aspire to over 100 years ago.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think it's really worthwhile to think about this poem as we see the ongoing news about all of our immigration crises at the moment and ask ourselves as a country, is this what we're offering? Is this what we're welcoming? And if it isn't, do we still believe in this poem? And if we do, what do we need to change to make this true of us as a nation?
Right. If we're going to chuck this thing, let's take it down, kids. Let's just go ahead and we can chisel it right off the side. I'm not kidding. If this does not represent America's ideals, fine. Let's at least be honest about it and put something else up there. For now, it stands, and I hope it stays. Elizabeth Metzger Sampson is the executive director of the Chicago Poetry Center. What a great resource that is for us in Chicago, both the center and you, Elizabeth. Visit poetrycenter.org, poetrycenter.org. Anything else we can do for you today, Elizabeth?
No, thank you very much for having me. If you guys want to check out our next event, we're doing our annual Poetry on a Boat reading with poets Tara Betts and Avery R. Young on August 29th at 6 p.m. You can find out all the details at poetrycenter.org.
If you want to find out more about listening to Poetry on the River, sounds like a lovely evening or afternoon, poetrycenter.org. Thank you, Elizabeth. You have a baseball team, Maple? Cubs, Sox, neither? It could be none of the above.
Do you really want to know?
I do.
Well, I am a diehard Cleveland Indians fan, everybody. Yes, I am.
You got family there, or is that where you're from?
That's where I'm from.
Well, then that's fair enough. You get to travel with your team, or your team travel
fair enough. Fair enough. Thank you.
Carm was describing me as a curmudgeon earlier because I wasn't enjoying Bill Walton's comedy show last night.
Check the tape. That was self-described. Go ahead.
So then in cue, you're whispering to me that you don't think Javi made a serious enough effort at that ground ball that cost him the game.
Yeah, so I'm watching I didn't watch the game live last night, but I'm watching the highlights this morning. And it's a ground ball up the middle. It's a 2-2 game. The base is loaded in the ninth. You got to force it second. And he just trots as the ball's headed into center field. I don't think he would have gotten it, most likely. But there is like at least a 3% chance that he gets a glove on it. Your Javi Baez is incredibly talented. You got to dive, man. The game's on the line. It way too cavalier, John.
When I watched that whole thing in real time, I didn't even notice that. I just saw ground ball up the middle, and I just, to me, it was the walks, it was the bad pitching, it was the inability to throw strikes and get outs, blah, blah, blah. And then, I think I had turned the TV off before that play was completed. I just went, boom, I'm done with this. This brings me no joy. Boom, it was off. Boom.
That was probably a good strategy, but there's something about just still being a little too cool, a little too accomplished, a little lack of urgency. It's just not.
The thing I don't understand is why the Cubs can't win on the road anyway. When the Cubs are doing well in a game on the road, the crowd is so loud, it almost sounds like a hometown crowd. It's true for any team in their division. If they're in Pittsburgh, if they're in Cincinnati, if they're in St. Louis, maybe not St. Louis so much, but maybe St. Louis, certainly Milwaukee. If they are on the road, the dimensions of the park are the same. I know you had to sleep in a hotel. Maybe you're a little tired, but it's a hometown crowd for these guys. Somebody's got to do a psychological study on how it is they cannot win on the road this year.
And it's especially road games at night. Sometimes if you see a team that's losing on the road in their day games, maybe they're going out, right? They're away from home, maybe doing things that they don't normally do. Who knows what's going on? But the Cubs are just losing games on the road at night, and I mean, I don't know. I don't put this necessarily on the road. I put on the fact their bullpen is brutal right now.
Speaking of Greenland, the president may want to buy Greenland. And I think that all of us took this as another very random, strange, distracting Trump thing. We probably took it more seriously than the president did. But evidently he's been asking advisors, he's talking to people going, hey, how about Greenland? What do you think, huh? And it just seems so random and weird. I posted on my Facebook page a 10-question fun facts about Greenland quiz because, as a rule, I try not to buy giant ice-covered islands until I know more about them. So I thought, let's find out a little bit more about Iceland. I'll just give you one question from the quiz. What's the population of Greenland? By the way, it's the size of Western Europe, which has 700 million inhabitants. How many people live in Greenland? Is it A, 55,000, B, 500,000, or C, 55 million? Carm, you want to take a guess?
I mean, I would have said five people if I didn't hear the numbers, so I'll go with the lowest.
55,000, which is the population of Berwyn, and that's correct. That whole giant honking thing, I know it's mostly ice, but 55,000 people. And you think, well, maybe we should have some of that because it's got a lot of fresh water. 7% of the world's fresh water is there. It's becoming more available by the day. It's close to our enemies, so we can, I don't know, listen or launch from there more easily. And it's got a lot of resources underneath that ice. So maybe Greenland would be a good thing to have. It's costing the Danes a lot of money. Let's throw some cash their way, see if they don't bite. Which, you know, makes it sound like a real estate deal in Manhattan. Hey, I understand that you're having a little trouble with rents. So I thought, okay, that sounds crazy, but then who did do that? Griff, who did do something just like this?
I have an idea.
Well, that's because you just got him on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, President Thomas Jefferson joins us now, the greatest land acquirer in history. President Jefferson, welcome to the show.
Good day to you, citizen.
By the way, before we get started, do you want to say anything about the Cubs' inability to win on the road?
Well, I know that when I wasn't sleeping in my own bed at Monticello, I frequently had a harder time concentrating.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. It's just hard to concentrate. Although the accommodations they have now, you should see them. They're suites, plumbing, nice beds, fresh basket of fruit. I mean, it's pretty nice with
that. And it wasn't always the case in my time. You know, when I would go to my other property, Poplar Forest, which was about 90 miles away, I would have to stay in private homes sometimes, and they would say, oh, well, you should take the bed. And then they would give me the bed, but the linens wouldn't have been changed for maybe 6 months or a year, and they wouldn't change them for me. And so now I have the prospect of getting into a bed in an age before people bathed, where the sheets have been on that bed for many, many months. And so this was not conducive to writing the Declaration of Independence.
Was the reverse true, too? That is, as a homeowner, if somebody knocked on the door, was it kind of protocol back then that you would offer them lodging?
Depends. You know, they would offer me lodging because I was a gentleman and I was well-known and I was, you know, I wasn't a highwayman or a ruffian. But generally speaking, there were few or no inns in this era. And so Virginia hospitality was such that you essentially offered hospitality, overnight sleeping arrangements, food for your horses, grooming services, whatever else you might need for almost anybody who turned up. But the level of comfort would rise according to the class background of the visitor.
Oh, really? So maybe you would change the sheets if it was George Washington, but if it was just me or some other schlub, not so much.
Well, I would change the sheets for anybody because it seems to me that hygiene is one of the most important of all human comforts. But this simply wasn't the case. And once when I took my daughters down to Poplar Forest, my granddaughters rather, they were so offended by the bed they had to sleep in that they took a quilt from the carriage and put it around them and then pinned it, so that there was a kind of a sheath, a kind of a prophylactic between them and this flea-ridden bed that they were placed on by our guests.
What do you think of the current president contemplating purchasing Greenland?
I don't know that it's for sale, and it depends on why he would be purchasing it. You know, I bought Louisiana Territory to extend what I called an empire for liberty, such as the world had never previously seen. So in 1803, I doubled the size of the American Republic with a single stroke of my pen for 3 cents per acre. I doubt that any current administration is going to get a bargain that good. But you have to ask, what would you do with it? Is it of strategic importance? Would you put settlers there? Are there resources there that would be useful? Does it complete the canvas of the American empire for liberty? I wanted Canada. I think we need Canada. I don't like the fact that the British are still on this continent somewhere. And I wanted Cuba. I wrote a letter to Madison about this around 1807, in which I said, if we could get all of Canada to the North Pole, and then Cuba, at the bottommost tip of Cuba, I would place a cairn with the Latin phrase, ne plus ultra, thus far and no farther. So my empire for liberty, if I had achieved it, John, would have been from the Atlantic to the Pacific. I only got up to the Rocky Mountains in my time, and from the North Pole to the bottommost peninsula of Cuba. That modest empire for liberty, I think, would have secured us in perpetuity. But I can tell you that I never once lusted for Greenland.
It's seen, there's a lot of ways to look at it. Maybe it's strategic for a lot of reasons, but it's also being speculated that it's just a stamp that, you know, here's what my administration did, right? So everybody knows Thomas Jefferson for the Louisiana Purchase. Goody for you. Well, if I was president, I'd like to have something like that too. And Greenland seems to be, you know, quote unquote, available. So it's as much for the person as it is for the cause.
Well, in my time, we were living through something called the Little Ice Age, and things were colder temporarily than they had been. The Seine River in Paris actually froze over 1 year while I was stationed there. And Lewis and Clark had some difficulties in the Bitterroot Mountains of Montana and Idaho because of this little phenomenon known as the Little Ice Age. So no one would have wanted Greenland in my time. It was even icier than at its maximum amount during your own era. But now that there appears to be some sort of celestial or global phenomenon that's melting the ice sheets,
yeah,
that land will become desirable. If you could fly over Greenland in a hot air balloon, you would see that along the coasts, even before all of this, there are small little settlements and farms. There's a spot of green land.
Yeah, right.
Along the perimeter of the island.
It's beautiful, and I got news for you. Not only can you fly over Greenland in a hot air balloon now, but you should see what we have available for air traffic. It's amazing what we can do.
Well, you know, we had balloons in my time. I witnessed some of the earliest balloon ascents in Paris and also in Philadelphia. And I wrote to my daughter, Martha, and said, if we could just learn how to steer these things, I could get from Philadelphia back to Monticello in 5 days, maybe 5 hours.
So there's no reason to, in your mind, though, write out the idea, to exclude the possibility of acquiring more land. If it's strategic, if there's reason to, if you can afford it, there's no reason not to.
Of course. There's no end of the canvas on which liberty, due process, the rights of man, trial by jury, and the pursuit of happiness could not be extended. And I wouldn't fight a war to get Greenland.
Right.
And I wouldn't lose any sleep over it.
Right.
But if it became available, it would add to the overall security and the resource base of the United States. And there's nothing contemptible about that. I don't know what your current president has in mind. But if his purposes are American purposes, are Commonwealth purposes, are the purposes of a free people seeking security in a dangerous world, then it's not ludicrous.
Yeah, they haven't reached out to us for the American experience, but maybe they would like it. I don't know. Denmark seems to be a pretty good parent state. One last thing, though. The Louisiana Purchase, I have 60 seconds, sir, but when you made it, what was the reaction? Were people on board?
Yes, mostly. So you can't do better than buying an empire of liberty for 3 cents per acre. Everyone got it that this was a bargain. We were going to either have to fight a war to secure the Mississippi River or station troops there for decades, maybe in perpetuity. We didn't want to have the Spanish or the French on our western flank choking our commerce in the Mississippi River. So it was a bargain by almost any measure. Now, it is true that several Federalist newspapers who just enjoyed making fun of me said that this was money we didn't have to purchase land that we didn't need. Mm-hmm. But that was very, very short-sighted. And Hamilton, of all people, came to me and said, why'd you spend money on it? We could have just sent troops and invaded it. Well, that tells you everything you need to know about the current star of Broadway.
All right, I'm not going to get into that. I know you don't like that show, but it's going to wrap up its run in Chicago January 5th, and they're still selling out, sir. They're still selling out.
You and I should go when I come there. I'm coming there.
Yes, you are.
We should go, and I could jeer.
you throw a tomato from the crowd. All right.
Well, I could bring tomatoes from Monticello, and you and I could hurl them.
No, we're not.
How about that?
No, goodbye.
I like a little rebellion now and then.
Thomas Jefferson was the third president of the United States, a regular guest to this show, and he may just join us in the fall. Teddy Roosevelt is definitely coming. The president 100 years after you served will be definitely on
stage. Oh, my. Well, he's a much different sort of person. He wouldn't throw tomatoes. He'd shoot bullets.
Okay. I'm done talking to you today, but thank you for your time, sir. Thomas Jefferson, third president. 10:52 on WGN. Mark Carmen, who now, if you're keeping score at home, has two notches in the curmudgeon corner. I only have one. I didn't like Bill Walton. You were mad at Javi Baez. But now you don't like the Aaron Waters show.
Isn't it just loud and crowded and the same every year? Am I missing something?
No, you're not.
Well, it's also awesome every year. I mean, like, if you could fly six supersonic fighter jets over a million people every year, that would be a good thing every year.
Eh. I can't relate. I have no idea what it's like. I just see these things going through the air. It looks kind of cool, but then I'm over it. It's like fireworks, John. I mean, how many times can you really watch the fireworks?
I like fireworks, but in this conversation, I am Team Carmen.
And Team Mary Schmeek, by the way.
You know, people have dogs, John. They got lives. I'm trying to work.
Oh, now we're getting somewhere. So you really don't consume the Aaron Waters show. You're just inconvenienced by it.
That's, at this point, yes, that's correct. Yeah,
but you've been to it? Like, have you had a good view of it before?
I've been there. I've been invited to, you know, people's high rise with pools. Let's check out the Aaron Waters show. Have a drinks. You know, I can't do it, John. Just not there.
Okay, but Bill Walton was good TV last night, right?
Well, that's right, but that was
you and I.
If it was every week it was Bill Walton, I'd probably move towards your side of the street.
Okay, but what about once a year Bill Walton? Well, that's what we're really talking about here, right?
Apples to apples, and I would say nonce a year Bill Walton. I can't believe the support that broadcast is getting last night. But I digress. Thank you, Maple. This is John Williams. The curmudgeon counter, I said a moment ago, was two Carmen Williams, one. He doesn't like the Aaron Waters show. He's mad at Javi Baez because Javi didn't make sufficient effort in the Cubs' dramatic and tragic loss last night. A text has just poured in from my wife, and she said, I completely agree with Mark Carmen. Javi just watched it go by. So I don't know what that means for the scoring on all of this, but you're getting some support from my home team on that, Carm.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you for relaying.
Doesn't exactly take away the sting, though, does it?
Not 100%, no. But, you know, it's progress, right?
Griffin, looks like you got something on your mind over there. Shaking his head, no. By the way, I'm just looking at the Aaron Waters show. A few details that you might want to know. Appearing here since the 1960s, the U.S. Army Golden Knights. When they would land in the 1960s in Lake Michigan instead on the beach. They jump with, among others, in the past, David Ross of the Cubs, Vince Vaughn, Bill Murray was with them. Chris Chelios was supposed to do it at 10 o'clock this morning, I believe, was the time that Maple said earlier. The Royal Air Force, Red Arrows, 9 fast jets from the United Kingdom are performing today. This is their first stop in the North American tour for that team. Of course, the Golden Knights will be jumping in the U.S. Navy Leapfrogs, and then the U.S. Navy Blue Angels as well. The six FA-18 Hornets, enlisted members of the U.S. Navy and the Marines. Lots of places to watch up and down the lake. That's one nice thing. I mean, if you want to go watch it at Oak Street Beach or if you want to watch it around Navy Pier, that's the prime location, and it's crowded. But I usually watch it further north up by, say, Montrose, and it's not so bad up there. You can get a spot, and you don't see it the same way everybody else does, but you do get to avoid some of the crowd.
Yeah, but what if we were playing tennis, John?
You could. Just every now and then you get this, yow! Do you like it when they buzz the ballparks, when they
no.
go right over the tops of the heads of the
yeah.
players?
Yeah, no.
Everybody just kind of does that wince.
You're peaceful, you're enjoying your beer, you're eating your hot dog, and then...
All right, The Mincing Rascals is a podcast we record weekly here at the studios of WGN Radio. It was judged by the Illinois Broadcasters Association this year to be the best podcast in the state of Illinois. We kick around current events, news, sometimes politics. We're joined this week by Eric Zorn, Steve Bertrand, and Justin Kaufman. Wherever you listen to your finer podcasts, listen to each week the free Mincing Rascals. You can say to your smart speaker, play the Mincing Rascals podcast, and we'll come right on with the latest episode. Now, you may know late Monday night, a group of teenagers, it appears, tried to steal a car in Lake County. The owner, a 75-year-old man, saw them. He came out. It was 1 in the morning. He shot and killed the 14-year-old who was approaching him maybe with a knife. Now, the other 5 teenagers are being charged with that young man's death for murder. I asked, is that the right charge? Steve Bertrand said,
I've never liked this law. I think you should be charged with the crimes you commit and punished for the crimes you commit. But this, I don't understand this. And I remember a few years ago, there was an off-duty Chicago police officer, and someone came and was burgling
yep.
his parents' home. And he ran up from the basement, came out, shot dead one of the guys, and the burglar's partner was charged with murder. And he didn't commit murder.
And the burglars in that case, I believe, thought that no one was home. I get this law if it applies to, say, 2 guys agree to rob a convenience store. One guy goes in with a gun, and maybe the other guy is either standing with him, or maybe he also has a gun, or maybe he's driving the getaway car. But the fact that someone could end up dead is a pretty good possibility.
So in your convenience store scenario, the clerk is shot by one of them, but they're both charged with murder.
I feel there's a difference if the clerk shoots my accomplice dead. There's a little bit of sort of frontier justice that's happened there already. I see charging the accomplice with armed robbery or with an accessory to armed robbery, but I don't see charging the accomplice with a murder of his own accomplice. Sort of common sense when you look at this.
And that's what it comes down to is common sense. This concept that nobody yet has, I mean, I think that Glanton's column kind of pointed out that there are some questions about why this guy shot. Nobody's suggesting that murder charges should be on the 75-year-old. He's protecting his property, and he shoots. That should be the end of that. The others that were involved should be charged for the crime that they were trying to commit.
So we don't need a murder charge.
Well, I don't understand why we need a murder charge.
Period.
These kids were allegedly trying to steal a car, and that is not a forcible felony.
They arrived in a stolen car.
The homeowner says, you know, scram, guys. And so the 14-year-old kid cops an attitude and approaches him. Allegedly, again, with a knife in his hand. Are the other kids stealing the car responsible for a car theft, or are they murderers?
Are they responsible for the actions of the 14-year-old, I think, is another question you guys aren't considering.
But we're not talking, again, about the 14-year-old. We're talking about the actions of the 75-year-old. Are they responsible for his actions, which we will stipulate were justifiable?
Okay, you guys have dismissed that. Fine. But
in my world...
Is there a difference?
There wasn't a murder there that night. There wasn't a murder to be charged.
Well, there was in Illinois, and I'm asking you just for a minute to think about why that exists.
I like Steve's point a lot. There isn't a murder. If it's self-defense, that's not murder. If this 14-year-old kid had killed the homeowner instead, if they had had a knife and he'd gotten to the homeowner and killed him, that's a different question,
right.
I think. I think it's a different question, but the law seems to treat them the same. And that makes no inherent sense to me as just sort of as a lay person. Not, I don't have a law degree, but I have a sense of common sense and right and wrong and what's extreme and what's
Is there an argument the other way? I mean, are there people out there right now saying, no, he should get...
One of them is standing right here.
So, John, you believe that all the kids in that car, everyone who's in that car, should be charged with murder?
I'm open to it.
Why?
Sure.
Really?
My gut reaction when I heard this was, hell yeah. Hell yeah. Do you remember last week on this very podcast when I was the only one that seemed to have some sympathy for the young kids caught in the crossfire of gang fire, and you guys were like, well, that's a separate conversation. And I said, I know, but could we just hold out a minute to consider what is it that gets a 14 or 15-year-old into this situation? And shouldn't we have some sympathy for those kids, even if they're gangbangers? I feel a little bit that way today. I think that 14-year-old kid is there as a result of the actions of these 18 and 17 and 16-year-olds, and that he is a victim of that. He wouldn't have been doing that. They may have brought him along to do the heavy lifting
so
because
the age
he was
important
so young.
To you.
It is
well,
to
what
me.
If this
I think
kid
he's
was 18?
Very manipulable.
What if this kid was 25 and the other kids were 18? You change your...
I might feel differently, but the 14-year-old thing is the thing that jumps. He's a baby.
Well, you're assuming a lot.
What did I say that is not?
Well, we don't know anything about the interpersonal relationships of these five or six.
Well, we know that kid was 14.
Okay.
14 years old. How do you think he got there? Do you think it was his idea? Do you think he was the gang leader and rounded up an 18-year-old?
Well, that also gives a lot of agency to 16-year-olds and 18-year-olds who are also very immature. Their brains are not fully developed at that age either. I mean, it's and which is why I think if you're under 18, you can't be sentenced to death for sure. And there's an issue, I think, about life without parole.
If you were the parent of that 14-year-old, I think you would say my son would not be dead today, but for the actions of these other kids.
I just don't agree with that.
Well, the law is on the books.
I think it's on the books to cover the kind of case I was just talking about, the convenience store holdup. That offends my sense of proportion in the justice system.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I appreciate that, Eric.
And I do take issue with you saying last week we didn't have sympathy with the kids caught in the crossfire. We certainly did. We just said... It was
different than a mass shooting.
And while we're exuding sympathy here, with these charges, we've just ended five other young men's lives. You know, they're now going to be murderers and they're done. And you can recover, I'm assuming, from being a punk car thief, you know, and deal with that. But we just wrote these guys off.
And also, why do you hate us so much?
I don't.
It's like he hates us.
I think I'm looking out for the underdogs here and maybe I'm doing it wrong. Answer me this. Next fall, history classes at public schools in Illinois will be required to teach LGBTQ history. That is, include in some undetermined way facts about the contributions of gay members to the state and the nation. Sally Ride comes to mind. Emma Lazarus, the woman that wrote the Statue of Liberty poem, was probably gay.
The current version or the original version?
The original one. Was Abraham Lincoln gay? That actually comes up in the conversation about this sort of thing. So, Eric, is this a good idea?
I don't like it because I have a long-standing opposition to these legislators in Springfield micromanaging public education. I didn't like it when they called for a moment of silence at the beginning of the school day. I think they're out of their lane. Are you going to out people? Are you going to say, are you going to talk about the sexuality of Abraham Lincoln speculatively?
But
Sally Ride was open. Was Pulaski gay, right? I mean, this guy.
That's not what they're going to be teaching. They're going to be teaching stories about Stonewall. They're going to talk about Harvey Milk. But my problem is that the history industry, if you will, is a private industry, and if you have a law a body of lawmakers down in Springfield, they're doing that because the private industry has decided to omit those stories from history. So you're not unlike what happens with the civil rights movement or African Americans.
So you think they're conspicuously absent right now?
I think they're saying, all right, you know what? For years and years and years, the history industry, quote unquote, is not telling the stories of gay and lesbians. So let's make sure that they do it.
Okay, John Williams, now read the next line in the bill.
All right, here it is. I knew you were going to do this, so I had... Ashley printed out
they
for
me. They
do
more than one line for these bills?
Check this out.
The teaching of history shall include a study of the role of the contributions of African Americans and other ethnic groups, including but not restricted to the Polish, Lithuanian, German, Hungarian, Irish, Bohemian, Russian, Albanian. It goes on with a whole host of nationalities. It then goes on to say, in public schools only, the teaching of history shall include a study of the roles of contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people in the history of this country and state. And Steve Bertrand, the teaching of history shall also include a study of
the benefits of unions,
the role of labor unions, and their interaction with government in achieving the goals of a mixed
system.
It's interesting history, by the way. I've read a couple books on it.
Can I agree that history should include that? But does anyone like the idea that state legislators?
No.
Because they could do the opposite.
Yeah,
they could actually.
Well, why would they say this?
If you're in a red state, you could have a state legislature write a law saying that you must not talk about
or must
X,
talk about
y,
the
Z.
Or talk about the dangers of unions.
Talk about, yeah, talk, you must teach that, that what unions have done to cripple our economy and what gay and lesbian people have done to ruin our moral fiber and so on. I mean, when you allow this kind of thing to happen because you agree with it, that's dangerous. And that's when you need to test yourself. When you look into law like this, saying, "Well, yeah, sure they should do that." There's a difference between saying a school district should do something and say they must do it. Because if you allow that, state lawmakers, for God's sake, in Springfield, I am outraged at the concept that these guys are going to tell history teachers across the state what they have to, what they can, in a sense, can't say.
But it still plays into that argument that you can say that the history of labor in this country, which has been a big, goes against corporations. Corporations control history and the history industry. So you have to have lawmakers say you got to teach this. If you don't, it's never going to get taught.
But I can make that, say the opposite. Though?
I can make that road shorter. Well, you can also say that the AFL-CIO gives a lot of money to Democrats, and the Democrat wrote the bill.
Ding, ding, ding. I think that's what that paragraph
absolutely.
Is
absolutely.
If you feel, and I guess this is the question, that's what we're discussing here, but if you feel that it's omitted because of political purposes, they have omitted LGBTQ stories because of political purposes. They've omitted union stories and labor and what labor's meant to create the work day that we know because of political reasons, then you have to ask the question, are lawmakers just evening or sort of, you know, balancing it out?
Do you really think that's what's going on here?
I mean, I'm just trying to.
Well, all right, I'm surprised they got this thing passed.
This one caller called and said that it's turned so much the other way that kids who are straight are felt put upon because they're not cool now.
Okay, but on the north side
know,
of Chicago,
they know how gay kids have felt for years.
Yeah, I mean,
how many kids though? How many kids that are in 8th grade or 12th grade when they're asked to check a box to indicate their gender are checking a third box these days? It's a lot of kids. There is a certain kind of peer pressure that plays on kids' identity.
Yeah, I don't know. But I always push back on that argument because I say there was never three boxes before. If your identity was mixed or you didn't feel that you were a straight man or a straight woman, you didn't have a choice. You just had to you had to lie. And I feel like now we're, as a society, we're getting to a point to say, all right, we're not going to lie anymore. And then people are okay with telling how they feel. And we're like, well, this is happening because there's three boxes instead of two. And I'm like, no, it's happening because we're not being bigots.
Yeah. I mean, do we need a pride parade if we're going to get into that question? Yeah, I think we still do because I think it is still harder for people in this society who are LGBTQ.
Right.
Their lot in life is still harder. We can talk about how it's cool in some circles to maybe to be gender fluid or gender non-binary. That may be true, but in society as a whole, these people still need the sense that they are a large community and they can be proud of themselves. And yeah, you need that. You need
Well,
parade.
That's why the legislator, Representative Mueller, said the language is there, right? Because it is more difficult for young people who are LGBTQ to succeed, and we need to sort of affirm that, welcome them into the fold.
And the other thing is, of course, they're not going to monitor this. They're not going to put
right.
cameras
You're
in classrooms.
You're absolutely right.
And
You're
so the
absolutely
teacher,
right.
So
Southern
teacher,
Illinois is going to have a different curriculum.
The teacher's going to go, yeah, there were some gay people. They did some stuff. And they contributed to our society. Next, the Albanians. They did some good stuff.
They contributed to our society. What's next? The Bohemians. They did some good stuff.
I'm imitating Justin Kaufman, imitating the downstate.
I like that.
I feel like I should say this, but it's not germane to the conversation, but I don't like people who keep, I mean, whatever. But my daughter's gay, and I don't think that has changed my opinions very much. But talking about this parade and thinking of that, I was in the Pride Parade with her before she was out, before I knew she was gay. And I think that did help her. And that was a positive thing. And if all of a sudden Emma's a little cooler because of that, well, she felt like she wasn't very cool for about 16 years of her life.
When I went to high school, the cool kids were football players. I didn't play football. That didn't mean that at a certain point, I don't have a lot of sympathy for people who are like, oh, I'm straight and it's not cool.
John was a football player in high school.
I was a kicker, so technically no.
Not cool.
But
what was your furthest kick?
43 yards.
How about backwards?
43 yards? That's what Cody Parkey missed.
We don't need to talk a lot about this, but when I was in high school, and for 1 year at Joliet Junior College, go Wolves, I was the kicker on the team, and I could tee it up and put it into the end zone.
Were you a cocky kicker?
Pretty impressive. Didn't you once have a punt for negative yardage, though?
I kicked the ball into John Thorson's rear end. Let's not talk about that. The Mincing Rascals are recorded on Thursdays. We put it up around 5 o'clock. The latest edition just went up a couple of days ago, and That's about 13 minutes of one that goes a little over half an hour. Remember, if you just say to your smart speaker, play the Mincing Rascals podcast or wherever you get your podcasts, look for the Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Eric Zorn and Justin Kaufman and Steve Bertrand.
Full time, you talk your money up while it's living in a coal mine.
This is WGN Radio. I'm John Williams. On Saturdays at this time, producer Griff introduces us to something musically. Last week it had to do with the passing of some Broadway legends. This week it's not that. What are we listening to this week?
It's a new song from Eau Claire, Wisconsin's own Bon Iver.
I didn't know Bon Iver was from Eau Claire.
Absolutely. Justin Vernon, the brainchild, the man behind his brainchild, I guess, the band called Bon Iver. Yeah, it's from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. It's sort of part of their legend from their first album, which came out over 10 years ago. There was a story, an often repeated, maybe too many times repeated story, that he went out into a cabin in the woods and recorded that album, which became a huge hit among some people. Anyway.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story.
No, yeah. Then you should repeat that. I didn't know that story.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And since then, you know, he's worked with Kanye West and Chance the Rapper and a bunch of other people, but he started acoustic. Now he's more experimental. The new album that just came out is called I, and that was the song called Hey Ma from that album.
Would you put Bon Iver in the top 10 mispronounced band names category?
Maybe in the beginning.
Now we should know it's Bon Iver.
French.
So you're asking us for what do we think of that song?
Yeah, did you like that song?
You know, I don't like those super produced, echoey things. I don't know if that's a fair description, but 1 to 100, I'm going to give that an 81. Mark Carman, 1 to 100, what do you give that Bon Iver hit?
I like this tune. I'm going to go with a 88, John.
Maple Walker, go.
About an 80.
Where are you on that, Griff?
I like it a lot. I'm a 90.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Well, that's fair enough.
He started so stark and simple, acoustic, just like wailing in a falsetto, but just acoustic songs. And since it has become very experimental, which I respect, but he lost me somewhere along the way just because I didn't give the effort. But I do respect him and think that he's making really cool music, but I'm just not like 100% all in. But this song is very, very catchy, so I dig
it. This is kind of random, but who's the guy that did the song, the whole album about Illinois and Michigan?
Sufjan Stevens.
Sufjan Stevens.
Yeah.
What's he doing? Is he doing anything lately?
Oh, yeah. He's
he's not doing the States Project anymore, right?
He famously said he would make one album for every state. So the 50 States Project, and he did Michigan, and he did Illinois, and he's not done a state.
And then he went, wow, I got a lot more albums to do.
It's been over 10 years. I remember so well very serious conversations that I had with friends of mine in high school. Like, you're an idiot if you think he's staying in the Midwest. The next state, New Hampshire. It would be so the project.
And then it was Michigan. Or whatever.
Then it never came.
Oh, and then it never came, period. Yeah. Well, the Illinois album and the Michigan album, the Illinois one particularly, I think it's just fantastic.
They're both unbelievable. I mean, they're both huge.
He's got a good Christmas album, for crying out loud, or song.
He's got like seven good Christmas albums. He's very prolific still, but he did abandon the 50 States Project.
All right, so we like to just kick around some things that are in the news. By the way, just this is kind of random, but you know how we were talking about Bill Walton doing the color commentary of the White Sox game last night?
Were you talking about that?
On a scale of 1 to 100, I gave it a 7 because I was feeling really generous. Carm, 1 to 100, what did you give Bill Walton's color commentary of the White Sox game last night?
I'm going to go with a 91, John.
Griffin, just based on what you've heard so far.
I watched a couple really short clips online.
Well, Carm's got some of the audio over there. I mean, any 10 seconds of it is as good as any 2 hours of it. Carm, if you've got...
No, I don't think that's true, though. I think there's probably a wearing effect that if you go in expecting just to watch a game...
Yes, well, that changes. That. Imagine that. I turn on the TV.
No, fair enough. But that changes my opinion because I'm going to watch him say something that I know is going to sound kind of silly. Just changes your approach. But I am mostly in favor. I say 70.
Carm, you got a soundbite for us?
I do, John. Here we go.
When they bring that high, hard one in, I stand in and lean back and then just bam, and it sails away out through the universe like a radio wave that goes past Saturn and Jupiter, Pluto, through the black hole, and into many other galaxies yet named.
I mean, come on.
Are the White Sox so,
I'm laughing.
Are the White Sox so irrelevant that we need to have that in place of color?
Wow.
No, that's, you know, that's really where I am.
That's you're reminding me of Sox fans of yore who used to hate kind of on what Pat and Ron did. Because they would just get bored and talk about whatever they wanted.
Cheese sandwiches.
And it's not about the game, some purist, usually White Sox fans, I think, would say.
I thought that Pat and Ron's banter was genuinely entertaining.
Well, I agree. It's not exactly the same, but you do sound like you're kind of coming at it from that
angle. From that angle.
Like, talk about the game.
Maple Walker.
Look, there's a lot of game. There's a lot of time to fill.
1 to 100, Maple. What did you give Bill Walton?
I loved it. Okay. I thought it was hysterical.
Okay, fine.
So yeah, this is the problem, because in that 20, I think I would actually feel the way you do if I had watched an hour of that game. But
an inning.
Listening to that clip, I was laughing.
Okay.
I don't know what to do.
By the way, he did ask, what's the record for most strikeouts in an inning? And everybody just kind of rolled their eyes. I looked it up. It's 4 strikeouts. Nobody's ever done 5. And it's been done 88 times. Once this season. So what do you know? He kind of stumbled onto an interesting point there.
There you go.
Griff, do you have anything else for us to kick around?
Look at that today? Chicago botanist I could play a clip of, too, if you want to do that.
I love this guy! Okay, I'm already going to give this a good number, but let me turn the music down, because you got to hear this guy uninterrupted.
So this is a video that went viral. This guy has a channel on YouTube where he just talks about botany and goes out into the woods.
He's from LaGrange, Illinois.
And a clip of his went viral of him rescuing a coyote, and we're going to hear some of that audio here.
Hey! You got to go to a rehab facility or something. Listen to me. Hey! You probably got mange. Maybe you got rabies. I should have brought my gloves. Shh, it's okay. You need help. You know, and I just don't want to get bitten. I want to help you, but I don't want to get bitten. Did some redneck shoot your parents? What's going on? Please don't bite me. But I've had my rabies spider. If it makes you feel any better, it's okay. What happened to your folks? Huh? Did rednecks kill your folks? I think you gotta come with me. I was gonna take you to a rehab. My friend Cece works in a rehab. Shh, it's okay. That was cute. You think you're tough. You're trying to show me you're tough. I believe you. I believe you're so tough. Come on, let's go. Please don't bite me. Please don't bite me or give me mange.
His name is Joey Santor, and he has a YouTube channel. I believe it's called Crime Pays, Botany Doesn't. I think you can find it there. But if you just Google, like, Chicago botanist.
He's in a field of tall grass, and this very scared, emaciated fox is running away from him, and he's pursuing it, trying to sort of, you know, save it or help it. And it's really sweet. And every now and then the fox will turn and kind of show its teeth, but it's got no chance. So he's thinking, can I pick you up and rescue you? But I don't want to get the mange. And he's got a tattooed arm that you see, and he's just the weirdest, sincerest, smartest, coolest dude. I totally love that interaction. And then there's another part where he puts it in the car. He's now going to take it to some facility, and he offers it some turkey jerky. And it's just like this rescue story.
Yeah, that's the rest of the clip. We'll save that. You can watch that at home. We won't spoil the ending.
How many times has that video been watched?
Oh, yeah. So his YouTube channel is fairly popular. They all these videos have around like 5,000-10,000 views maybe. But then that one got transferred to Twitter, where it's now been watched like 7 million times, I think.
7 million times. Joey Santor?
Santor.
S-A-N-T-O-R-E. And it's, you're rooting for that fox. How lucky that fox was found by Joey Santor, originally from LaGrange, Illinois. There's a Cook County Forest Preserve out that way. Maybe he used to traipse those woods. But it's really, really sweet. I give it a 95.
Yeah, I'm up there, too. Yeah. I love it.
Carm, you haven't watched that yet, have you? Maple, when you get a chance in the newsroom, check that out. You'll, and everybody's loving it because of the Chicago accent. which, I don't know, it seems a little obtuse, but I just like it for the interaction he has with the animal.
There's something lost on, if you watch the video, the way the animal reacts to him, too, is so sweet. But
eventually he starts to pet it, you know, just calm it down, and then the thing starts to chill out, and then he picks it up. Oh, you're like, oh, hooray.
Well, you think it's a joke at first, and then you realize that he's actually kind of sincere, but he's also funny.
Yeah,
you know?
right. Yeah, so I'm giving it a really good score. By the way, can I ask you guys what you think of this? We're going to talk about this on the radio, I think, on Monday. More and more teachers now in public schools post online, here's what I need for my classroom. It's like GoFundMe for public school teachers. And I have mixed emotions about that. I hate to see the teachers have to spend money out of their own pocket. I don't know how they're supposed to do it. But so public school, like, you're already paying taxes and they're already drawing a salary. But now they go online and then you find out your kid's teacher or school needs more money just to sort of get the books and supplies, literally supplies for the classroom. So they have GoFundMe pages and you can find a teacher's website or post and then you donate money. And I'm weirdly torn about that. Maybe not. I don't think I'm mad at the teachers. I'm mad at the circumstances. How about that?
Yeah. So you don't like the situation, but what you don't like is the circumstances that cause the situation.
So, yeah, I know.
And
so.
I don't think there's an answer. If you're saying, should they or should they not do that? You brought it up in the vibe score. There's got to be the number here.
Okay, so should they do that?
Yes, 100. I mean, if they feel they need to, I don't feel very complicated
Carm,
about
are
that.
You reacting
I think it's
to
sad.
This
but
I'm listening, John. I look. No one's putting a gun to your head right to donate. I give it a 99.
Maple Walker, go.
95.
Yeah, okay.
Same.
I'm not going to vote then. Because I honestly don't have a number for the issue, but we're going to talk about that on our show come Monday afternoon. It's 11:49. Okay, let's pause here. Amy Guth is getting ready to do her show. We're continuing to follow the weather for you, too. I can see that looks like I'm just looking out the window there. This may not matter to you that much. You've already made up your mind whether or not you're going to the Air and Water show today. It's been raining at the lakefront, and the windshield wipers seem to be still working on the cars that are traveling beneath us. We told some jokes yesterday, repeated a couple of them today, and said if you've got one you want to share, go ahead and let us hear it. By the way, Griff, one of the jokes that was texted in yesterday, John Williams returned to his old childhood neighborhood but couldn't find his old friends, the Pimple family. He couldn't remember their address, but he saw a mailman and said, "Excuse me, sir, but do you have a pimple on your route?" And the mailman said, "No, I've always walked this way." That was just a joke that somebody texted in. And I thought
like
I would...
that one. I like that one.
What do you know? 1 to 100. I give that a 93.
That's the first good one.
John, what's the difference between a Zippo and a hippo? Well, one's a little lighter.
We've got a bunch of texts on this. Actually.
Okay, what have you got?
Do you want to hear a joke? The Chicago Cubs closers in the ninth inning. Hey!
What else you got, Griff?
It seems like you like the science ones. Why don't... am I wrong?
No, I love... if you've got a joke about electrons, I'm happy.
Started with like 5 on particles, so... why don't scientists trust atoms?
I don't know.
Because they make things up.
Thank you, Amy. Hey, Griffin, one atom says to another, "I think I lost an electron." The other one says, "Are you sure?" And the first one goes, "Yeah, I'm positive."
I'm trying to... Oh, there's a text that was from yesterday, and they said their next text was this morning and said, "Thanks for the jokes. Corny but uplifting." But I thought the text from yesterday was the joke. And the text was, "How many people poop their pants?" And I'm reading this wondering, where is the joke in there? I think I get it. No, it seems funny, but I can't. That was from yesterday. Sorry.
Any more for us, Griff?
I'm struggling here. It's kind of hard to...
Termite walks into a tavern and says, "Hey, is the bartender here?" I got just one more for you.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm filtering through...
various comments
other
about various
comments,
things.
Yeah.
My friend bought a dog from a blacksmith. My friend bought a dog from a blacksmith. As soon as he got home, the dog made a bolt for the door. This is some jokes that people shared with us. show's over. Amy Guth is in the studio getting ready for full hour today, right? White Sox baseball later this evening. So you got a whole show today.
That's right. I do. I have a full show. No night show, but a day show for sure.
Oh, that's right. You're preempted tonight. Yeah,
I am. Yeah. But we're going to talk a little bit about the casino because there was a little bit earlier this week, a report that was released from the Illinois Gaming Board. Some consultants that came and did it and kind of looked at the feasibility of the casino on the five proposed sites. And the news, not so good. It kind of has really changed a lot of people's thinking on that. So we're going to take a look at sort of the business case of that. And we're going to talk to the New York Times bureau chief from Albany, who extensively covered kind of, you know, what did that look like in New York? And what did that look like, you know, what does that look like in other areas? And kind of take a look at maybe what we could learn from our friends in other areas of the world, you know, Atlantic City has all that kind of, yeah, lots of stuff. All that gambling, that first half.
When you see how the state and the city want the deal to go down, you wonder if anybody would ever want to open a casino in Chicago.
I know. There's that. So not only is it to tax to the point that it would be almost unfundable by anybody, the red tape attached to it would just be, I don't know, exhausting. I also think kind of the bigger thing that I'm looking at is there's been a lot of speculation of will Pritzker and Lightfoot play nice? Will they get along? Will they work well together? What will this team be like? And I think this might be one of the first big tests of it, of how they reach a decision about this casino.
Hmm. Amy Guth's ready to come your way. She's got a full hour of stuff like that. Okay, Amy, have a good show.
Thanks so much.